You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.
Hello and welcome to the Knicks Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hahn. After two games so far in the Eastern Conference semifinal matchup between the Knicks and the Heat, the teams are tied at one game apiece as the series heads to South Beach for games 3 and 4. I don't think we're going to know anything about who's playing in game 3 tomorrow until probably 3:30 on ABC when the ball tips, because the gamesmanship going on now between these two franchises,
yeah, come on, man,
is really special. Like, it really, it's fun. Jimmy Butler took a picture of his ankle and put it on social media, yeah, in his sock and his shoe, as if to say, like, I'm fine. I think he's going to play. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he sits out, but they're going to keep him, you know, they're going to keep the game going. But I'll tell you this, though, Jalen Brunson has not, like, I didn't expect him to practice because it's playoff time. Guys don't normally practice, especially when you play 40 minutes a game. You don't normally practice during the week before, like days before a game. And they've had so many days off between games. You want to rest your guys at this point. You're not going to lose conditioning. Bart, right, you can explain this. When you get to December in a football season and you sit 3 days, are you out of shape?
No, it's on automatic. And I guarantee you, he may not be practicing, but he's going to go walk on the elliptical. He's
going to get loose. Yeah.
He's going to do some jump rope. He's going to do something.
Well, I don't know about that.
Or he'll get on.
He's got a sore foot. You don't want to mess with that.
He would get on the Ultra G.
There you go. Right.
The Ultra G, for everybody out there that don't know what Ultra G is, it's a bubble on the treadmill. And what happens is, it's like space. They can take percentages of your body weight off of the treadmill.
Zero gravity.
So when you're coming back, and go all the way to zero gravity. But, you know, you're going to be able to get a workout in. So they probably zipped them up to the Ultra G. And he probably, like, ran maybe a couple miles.
What about
miles.
The pool? You can go in the pool, too, right?
Yeah, they got the treadmill in the pool. But I like the Ultra G because, like, at least you're standing up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. So the Brunson side of this thing is something to watch because of the great fourth quarter that he had. And did the Knicks find something? Did he find something there? And these extra days off, critical for everyone. Critical for Randle, who after game 2, as good as he looked and the numbers he put up, did say when he was told that, you know, you looked 100%, he's like, well, I'm glad it looked that way. You know, it's not exactly, you know, which tells you he doesn't feel that way. And he and Brunson and then Jimmy Butler, who did not play in game 2, and see if he's ready to go. My bet is that he will be ready to go. He will play. And we all know, in a series that's tied, game 3 is usually a pivotal game. Game 3 is usually the one that really does set the tone.
3 and 5 are like...
Oh, yeah. 1, 3, 5 are always the ones, right? But the series moves to Miami. And everybody makes a big deal a lot of times about how if you win one of the first games of the series, you're the road team, you get to split. Now you've got control. You've got command because now you've taken back home court advantage. In a lot of cases, I will say that's true. I don't know if that's true with this series because Miami is historically heavy New York-based people. And I can see this building having a ton of Knicks fans in it. We saw it already. The Randle game, when he scored 43 and hit that, you know, double bang three-pointer to win it, that place was it went bananas when he hit the three. And he was, like, yelling to the crowd and, you know, encouraging all the Knicks fans. They were chanting MVP when he was at the free throw line. They were chanting, let's go, Knicks. So I want to see, especially a Saturday afternoon game in Miami, how many Knicks fans got tickets to that game. How many Knicks fans are going to be in the building for that game and how much it's going to be a bipartisan crowd, which might take away some of that home court, a lot of the home court advantage that Miami might be used to having with other series, like when they had the Milwaukee series, when they played the Bulls and even the Hawks, like the place was all about them. I'm so curious to see what kind of crowd you're going to get because we haven't seen this. Now, remember, the last time the Knicks played the Heat, they played the Heat in 2012, and it was LeBron and Wade and Bosh. You ain't getting everybody was a Heat fan back then, everybody. So that crowd was so much more behind the Heat. But I know that place during the regular season has been 50-50 when the Knicks are down there, and I'm really curious to see if what's called MSG South will be that in the playoffs. That'll tell me a lot.
Yeah, and let's see how they deal with that, right? Because it's like one of those things, like, you know, they're doing their best to make sure that they don't have to that they're monitoring where these tickets are being bought.
Now, remember, people probably live down there that are New Yorkers. These are real transplants that live down
there.
That's
what I'm saying. You probably got to answer a question. Who is Ronnie Cyclese? You know what I'm saying? you got to be, who is Tim Hardaway?
But I think you know Tim Hardaway. But yeah, the Ronnie Cycli one's a good one.
And that's what it is. So, like, so this is the thing. Like, also, a Miami crowd would go silent on you, because I experienced this as well when we go down there for the Jets Dolphins.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, that's true.
You'll hear the Jets, you know, going banging out there when you start winning.
Yep.
Like, because those Miami people are super fickle. It's too many things to do in Miami. Listen, I gave up my money to do this. You know what? I'm going to 112. I'm going to 11. Nah, I'm out. Yeah. Hey, I'll see you later.
It's also the middle of the day. It's an afternoon game, remember. So it's just all stuff I'm curious to see.
Weather's beautiful in Miami right now.
Game four is Monday night. That could be a different story. But a Saturday afternoon game, I'm curious to see. ABC, I'm curious to see what the crowd is going to be. Well, regardless, the Knicks actually have been a very good road team this season. It's something that Josh Hart talked about.
There's two parts of it. I think when you go on the road, there's less distractions. You're not worried about family, tickets, you know, where you're going to eat after the game. It's only basketball. So being able to do that, it's just the guys in that locker room, the coach staff, the front office there. So sometimes, you know, you're able to be locked in a little bit more. And then we play for the Knicks. Knicks fans, they show up, you know, wherever we play. Whether that's Oklahoma City, or I know you guys are down to Miami at the end of the year, and we're having, you know, let's go Nick chance, you know what I mean? So I think it's the camaraderie that we have, being able to be locked in and focused, and the Knicks fanatics at, you know, traveling and show out.
He saw it in Cleveland. The Knicks played three road games in that series. They won two of them. Think about that. And in that game five, tons of Knicks fans in that building cheering at the end of that game. So it could be a small part of the series, Bart, or it could be a big part of the series. As we've said, role players play better at home. That happens because on the road you feel a little more uptight, you're a little more nervous. But Josh Hart pointed out how actually you're a little more free because at home, and especially at the Garden, when you've got a million celebrities everywhere, your family's around, everybody's around, everybody wants a piece of you, they can go down there and just sort of be in their foxhole and understand, because I firmly believe this game three is going to tell, because game one happened, there was no Randall. Game two happened, no Jimmy Butler. Game three, I expect everybody's going to play. And game three might be the game that we really get to know what this series is all about.
No, absolutely. This is right, because now no excuses. You got your hobbled stars there. They're playing through it. Everybody's playing through something. And we're going to see, because, like you said, we've made the argument. Well, they won without Julius Randle.
Yeah.
They won, look how close it was to Jimmy Butler. Now, okay. All hands on deck.
That's it. And you could say, well, one guy's hurt, this guy's hurt. Everybody's hurt.
Everybody's hurt.
You got Randle hurt. You got Brunson. Brunson's got a sore foot. Jimmy Butler's got the ankle. All the excuses go out the window. Now, let's get an update on Julius Randle, who was asked about his ankle and how it feels.
Like I said, I try not even think about it, man. It doesn't matter at this point. I'm healthy enough. I feel good enough to play. I feel great. So, that's where my focus stays.
And if you feel healthy enough to play, you play.
That's the mindset. It's like it's like that, man. It's like, you know, Bart, how you feel? Like, I remember, like, you know, the whole Ed Reed clip, right?
Yeah.
In college, how you feel, man? Quit asking me how I feel. I'm hurt, man. I'm hurt. I don't care. Let's go. We're supposed to be up kicking these dudes' ass. Let's go. Follow me.
We're all hurt. We're all banged up. Right, but Randle still had an outstanding game, a 25-10 and 4 kind of performance. So, you know, the question again, it was 8, I believe. And the question, of course, was,
amazing,
is like,
man,
how surprised was he that with the ankle issue that he had.
Are people ready to shut up now?
Well, we'll see. But he was asked how surprised he was that he played that well with the ankle injury.
No, I've talked all year about the mental. So at this point in the season, that's just what it is. The body will do what the mind tells it to do. So
is that really is it as easy as that, Bart? You had to deal with
that
toe injury.
No pain, no pain. I mean, I played with a broke hand. You know what I did? I broke my hand the first play. It's weird. All the dumb stuff that happened to me was when I was going against the Patriots. I broke my hand like the first play of the Patriots, like when I was with the Ravens.
Right.
And all it did was I beat my hand against the ground until it went numb, so I wouldn't feel it. Like a boxer, it goes hard after a while, and I just tape my fingers together.
You beat your hand against on the turf?
Yeah. Because it'll go numb.
You like broke your hand and decided that a good idea would be to just smash it a couple of times until I felt nothing.
Because your body is sending endorphins to it.
Wow.
And it numbs up and you forget. You know, have you ever seen a boxer, they break their hand, but then it's like, wait till that thing hardens up. And it hardens up. Like, that's what it did. So I didn't like a cast, so I just taped my fingers together. Maybe that's why my finger's still crooked.
Maybe. Now, I have heard that, though, especially with ankles, is that if you hurt it in a game, it's not really till the next day, right?
Yeah.
Like that's why guys tie up their lace a little tighter.
You just keep
the swelling.
Yeah,
keep it under control. It's the minute, like in hockey, they say, you don't want to take your shoe out of the boot. Don't take your foot out of the boot.
Don't take it out because it's going to expand.
Leave it in the boot because the minute you take it out, you won't be able to get it back in.
Because it keeps the swelling up in the shins. It'll push the fluid up. See, really, people don't realize that it's not the particular injury that hurts. It's the fluid that comes and makes it tight in space and you lose flexibility.
Right.
So what you have to do is, like, even Julius Randle, I guarantee you he probably has a foam pad, either with a circle cut out of it or it's a U-shape, and they put it underneath the ankle where the swelling is, and they tape there, and it pushes the swelling up, and it gives the joint flexibility. Man, this is the only place you can get this type of – listen, do not listen to me. I'm not a doctor, but I know a lot of doctor stuff.
Yeah, because you've been through a lot of that. Now – as I mentioned, this is game three. This is a big game. When your series is tied, you're on the road now. Everybody should be playing in this game. A lot of questions could be answered in this game. But I want you to listen to something as C.J. McCollum. He was on Get Up this morning. He was also on DNR this morning as well. And he's still picking the Heat in this series. But here's his explanation.
To be honest with you, I really like this Knicks team. I like the way they've continued to develop and grow. But it's just something about that Miami Heat team and how they just figure things out. And Jimmy Butler's got 6 days of rest in between games. He missed game two. He's got 6 days to kind of rest and get ready. I think the winner of game three wins the series. I think historically when it's been 1-1, the team that wins game three wins the series 79% of the time. So I go coin flip. But since it's in Miami, I give Miami the advantage of game three. And since historically speaking, they got an 80% chance of winning, I'm going to go with Miami. But I think this does go seven.
Now, again,
hater.
Well, but he's going by the percentages, but he used the fact that the game is in Miami, which is why I've added that element.
Right.
I'm throwing that into this conversation because that is actually true. It's always, you know, the winner game three goes on to win 79% of the time when it's a 1-1. And he said because Miami's at home, he gives them the edge.
No, the Knicks are at home.
And I'm telling you, I don't think the home edge exists as much as it would in any other series. If they were like tonight, Sixers, Celtics in Philly, that is heavily in favor of Philly. That crowd is all about them. Just like in Boston, it's all Boston. But this series, man, is a lot different because of what Josh Hart said.
Yeah.
Knicks fans do travel well, and Miami is basically all New Yorkers down there. It's all, I mean, a ton of New Yorkers are down there. Now, are there Heat fans? Of course. There's a ton of Heat fans down there.
But how many of them are real Heat fans that were born there? A lot of those guys that's going there move there.
Well, they're a Heat fan, yeah.
Different level of fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile,
now,
the people.
It'll be loud, but it'll be loud either way.
Yeah, but
that's what I think.
Yep, the people showing up for the Knicks are born, bred Knicks fans.
Yes.
The people that's showing up for the Heat are imports from other cities that just want to go to the hot event. Different level of stupidity.
800-919-3776.
Mimosas drinking by those players, Slits beer drinking by the Knicks fans is coming in.
C.J. McCollum said something else about the Knicks that I do want to get to. We'll get to that coming up because it's a very interesting topic that also leads us into something that happened in the NBA. Like I said, it's all connected. But C.J. McCollum had another thing to say about the Knicks that you've got to hear. But first thing, let's get a couple of calls. 800-919-3776. Jose is in Brooklyn. What's up, Jose?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Just wanted to talk about this Knicks game. I think this is a very pivotal game, and I really hope that they pull this out. But I do agree with you, Alan, because being the person that went to Miami and the game that the Knicks lost, It was mostly a lot of Knicks fans, and very surprised to see a lot of R.J. Barrett fans down there, too. But then again, I forgot he went to Florida in high school.
Yeah, he went to high school there.
So I'm just going to say right there, I expect it to be at least 60-40, but that 40% Knicks fan is definitely going to be very audible throughout the game.
Usually is. And again, if the Knicks are having success, thank you, Jose, you're going to hear from them. Now, if Miami, if Jimmy Butler gets going, and of course, I just think you're looking at – I remember the days, anybody old enough to remember, Islanders-Rangers at the Garden was – a majority Rangers fans. Like back in the day, you probably had 80% Ranger fans at the Garden. But Islanders-Rangers at the Coliseum was 50-50. Like it was off the charts. And the atmosphere was wild because whoever was playing well, that fan base would start crowing and screaming and yelling. But if like the other team just did one little thing, it turned. The chants were dueling chants back and forth. Like it was, I'll tell you what, The Rock in game 7, if you knew that atmosphere, if you were in Newark and you went to game 7 Rangers Devils, you know what I'm talking about. Wild atmosphere, chants that were dueling chants, back and forth, all that stuff. That's what I feel we're going to get out of this game 3 and maybe even game 4 as well. The game 4 Monday night might be a little different because it's a weeknight.
Yeah.
But a Saturday afternoon, I could see this crowd being not all Heat fans. And I could actually almost be split. And can that make a difference in the game? You never want to say a crowd affects a win or a loss.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, who impacts. Energy. But it can affect a win or a loss, and especially in the playoffs. It's just something, like I said, to keep an eye on. We go to Dave in Syosset. What's going on, Dave?
What's up, guys? Going back to Game 2, do you think the Knicks need to make any type of offensive adjustments going forward? Because I know when the Heat, you know, went into the zone, it didn't really look like the Knicks did anything to kind of break the zone. They made shots, but it didn't really look like they did much else to break it. So
yeah, I would, you know, again, Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, like in the on the foul line, being a guy that you can throw to.
You can't get that with Mitchell Robinson.
Middle of the zone and then make the passes to the weak side. But the bottom line, Dave, look, you're going to see zone. The adjustment to make is make your damn open shots.
Yeah.
That's the only adjustment.
Yeah. I wonder if they put Julius Randle there too, right? Because he's a guy that can turn around in a triple threat position, have guys cutting from both sides. We see it happening with Anthony Davis like every game.
Yep.
He missed like 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's a weird spot to shoot from. But
you know, not a comfortable place anymore.
Yeah, because it's like a floater / shot. Do I push
because
it,
a lot of players need it. Rhythm to shoot, and that's not a place where you could just put the ball on the floor and just do like a quick little pull-up. You've got to just jump and shoot.
Which is why some guys are horrible from the free throw line, but they can shoot.
right, but can shoot. But shoot threes because it's
they
more
can
in
shoot
rhythm.
Threes.
Right. Can I just take a dribble and step into this foul shot?
No! Turn and shoot, dummy!
You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.
Bart, you think whoever wins this game wins the series? I mean, the percentages tell you yes. When it's 1-1, game three winner goes on to win almost 80% of the time.
I think if the Knicks lose this one, it's going 7.
I'm with you.
If the Knicks win it, it's going 6.
You know what? That's how I feel. I almost feel if they lose it, this probably has to go 7. And it's going to be a battle of attrition. It's going to be who can last longer. Because you saw after game 2, not only was Randle playing hurt, Brunson playing through pain, Butler not playing at all. There were guys on the Heat that left the court in pain. Max Strus, who had a big third quarter, had a back contusion. Caleb Martin also got banged up in that game as well. Kyle Lowry always looks like he's hurt. Like he's always kind of banged up. But all these guys are saying they're playing, they're good to go, they're going to go. And this time of year, man, everybody's playing. Like it takes a lot to miss a game.
And it's about the depth. And, you know, I think, you know, the Heat have shown that they have depth, people that they can count on. You talk about Vincent, you talk about Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But also you talk about, you know, when you watch yesterday, the physicality and making sure you sit down on these picks, making sure that, you know, there's no easy layups.
Yeah.
You know, it's a battle of attrition, right? So you got to beat them down. And you know that you are the younger team. They're the older team as far as some key players they have. You know, Bam is young, but Jimmy Butler is injured.
Well, Bam talked about a hamstring that keeps bothering him.
Yeah, Cam, you know, Laurie has a bad knee. So you lean on that, and you look at you know what Bam said. So you run them, right? You get guys out there, you run them, you beat them up, you get them on the ground, and it it's almost like when we was watching the Last Dance,
yeah,
and Scotty was like he had the migraines, he just couldn't mm-hmm. answer the bell because of the physical toll that the Pistons had just put over him for like 7 games,
yeah,
and he woke up with the migraine, couldn't see, and he was useless. That's because they just you just keep throwing bodies and waves of people at them. So now Hardenstein and Robinson, they got to lean on Bam because he's the guy that you got to attack. Get him off the boards. Get him disinterested in going to crash the boards because he knows when he go down there, it's going to be some elbows, it's going to be some hip chucks, it's going to be all kind of stuff going down there.
You have to, and I said this after game two, and I'm sticking to it. This series is going to be a fight. You can't look at this as, first of all, none of these games are going to be easy. It's not supposed to be. It's Knicks Heat. Knicks Heat is not easy. Anybody that thought, oh, they were without Jimmy Butler, it's going to be easy. No, it's not, because you're not crediting what the Heat are about, what Eric Spoelstra's about, and the type of players that they have, the personalities that they have. Guys who are, if they're veterans, they're pretty smart, savvy. They can, you know, they're going to outfox you like they did in game one. They've got tough guys. You have to understand you're going to get hit a lot. You're going to get hit probably 3 times on one foul. You're not going to get every call. You have got to persevere through this. This is going to be a dogfight. That's the history of Knicks Heat. And the Knicks had to find that, and they did, I think, at the end of game two. They started realizing that we just have to outwork them. And Isaiah Hartenstein came in the game, and he became that catalyst of diving for everything. Every loose ball, if you can't catch it, punch it. Just get a deflection. If they're about to grab a rebound, just tap it out of their hand just to create some chaos. That's what this is going to have to be. Diving for everything, hitting, hard screens, box outs. Like, this is old school physical basketball, because that's the only way the Heat can win. They know it. It's the only way they're going to win. You have to believe that the way they were shooting the three is not going to last, because when you play as hard as they have to play, it's going to wear you out. So the three ball that was a big story in game one was not as much of a story in game two. So all these things I'm talking about sound like, you know, very trite, cliche things, but in this series, they're all going to matter. So which team are the Knicks ready to play that way 3 more times to win this series? Thanks for listening to this latest episode of the Knicks Fix Podcast. Enjoy the games. As always, for more Knicks coverage, be sure to tune in to Bart and Hahn weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.